the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, your favorite podcast, I would say. Sponsored as always by the mighty ShakePay, best place for Canadians to buy and sell, though you should never sell Bitcoin. They are running, as always, Len, the trifecta of stacking and, you know, stackable faucets. They have the Shake Paid. If you spend out of your CAD balance, you can have your purchase reimbursed in Satoshi's. Incredible. They have Shaking Sats. If you use our promo code to sign up, CBP, they just give you money every day with, you know, via Satoshi's. Think up to $1,000 after 200 straight days shaking. Now, you may think 200 straight days is a lot. I promise you it doesn't feel like that much when you get there. Yeah, I'm out like $300 and change. My wife is at like some ungodly number in like the sixes, I'm pretty sure. So,
nice for her.
Yeah. Good for her. And finally, they also have the Sats Back card. So if you spend out of your CAD balance, even if you're not reimbursed for the full purchase price, whatever you bought, bro, they still give you 2% back, which is dope, up to, I think, $5,000 a month. And if you're spending more than $5,000 a month, you should be spending it on Bitcoin anyway. So with that said, Len, good to see you. I think I have the beginnings of the virus. My throat's pretty sore. It's a little itchy. I feel like I'm starting to get a bit of a chill. All this, of course, from a weekend wedding in Hamilton for my cousin Megan. Congratulations, Megan and Dan. Huge wedding, 250 people at Carmen's, lots of dancing. I was telling my physio guys today that, you know, when you delete a million beers before, you start hitting the dance floor, it's amazing how much more capable you are, even on a busted Achilles, which is on the men now, I guess. But anyway, yeah, they were both laughing and also a little concerned today.
So you went to that wedding, and in lieu of that, Joey, I went to a Bitcoin event in Whitby. And I just want to thank everybody out there that participated in it, the people that were there that set it up, because it's not an easy feat to set up something like this. ShakePay, Ledin, were the sponsors of this event. Fantastic stuff. Met so many people. And I just want to say thank you to everybody out there that showed support for our show, because there's a number of different fans that watch us. And there's probably a few new ones too at that. So this is going to be good to get some new people on board, but also it's good to meet a lot of people that I've been talking to, including somebody from the Canadian Investor podcast. I talked to Braden for the first time in person, really cool guy. So yeah, it's good to say hello to him and meet him face to face. Joey, too bad you missed it.
Buddy, I'm the busiest man in the business here. It's funny. We were just talking about the June 4th meetup and how my wife has already got my calendar full for that day with some kind of barbecue or whatever. And I don't know, Len, I might have to just skip the barbecue and go to Innocente and hammer a couple of beers with the plebs, I think.
Yeah, so just to give everybody a heads up, so the way I understand it, it's June 4th at Innocente Brewery in Waterloo, 4 p.m. Don't quote me on that time, but I think that is what they're aiming for, a start time. It should be a fantastic event. The last one was just massive. They had Greg Foss there and a number of different people. Greg was actually there this past weekend too, giving his speech. So whoever can make it to Waterloo for the June 4th event, certainly do so. I'll be there. It looks like Joey may be there too. This would be the first of us. Wow, Joey, two of us together at the same place at the same time. This is uncanny. I know.
So we should get into the A Block stories. Do you want to give a breakdown of what's going on, or should we let our guest, bring a guest on today to talk about the first
story? Yeah. Well, I do have one thing I want to actually a couple of things we have to clean off the table here. Okay, number one, we did get a review from Apple Podcasts, and I just wanted to say, like, you know, every time we do get these, I would like to read them. And this one is, it says, keep the content coming. It says, amazing job, gents. Love the show. Keep the epic interviews coming. And he signs this Sven Bitcoin, which is funny because his username is Steven 80 on Apple Podcasts. So I don't know if I should call you Steven or Sven or both. But either way, thank you very much for this 5-star review. Also, we didn't touch on the price of Bitcoin yet.
Oh, yeah. Are we still talking about that?
I guess it's part of the topic of the day. I don't know.
It's $38,585 US right now.
Yeah. So 49,668 in Canuck bucks. So with that, I think we're pretty much done all the house cleaning stuff.
Should we bring him in? Show favorite, a favorite of you out there in the kingdom of Canadian Bitcoiners podcast fans. It's Bitcoin Gandalf from Parts Unknown. Buddy, how you doing?
Gentlemen, thanks for having me back on the show. Happy to
cast
be here.
Cast a spell on us, man. Cast a spell.
So, okay, we're so about Gandalf, yeah, Len's about to ask the same question. Where are you? We as much as we like getting the whole like costume and everything on the show, I understand that you're, again, remote in a way that you're not remote usually. So what are you doing? Where are you at?
All right. I'm going to go from granular to big picture. I'm sitting in my car outside an Airbnb cottage that I'm staying at with my family on the Isle of Man, which is a small island between the UK and Ireland.
Are you going to be there for the Isle of Man TT? I think it starts later this month.
No, I'm just here for, so today's a holiday here. It's like UK Labor Day. So I'm just here until Wednesday. I arrived on Saturday, staying till Wednesday, checking it out. There's a lot of Bitcoin activity going on here. Some good Bitcoin companies. There's no capital gains tax, and the good guys from and girls from Coin Corner are based out here, and they've been orange pilling businesses, so you can pay with sats like via Lightning in quite a few places. I've been buying some beers and stuff like that with sats,
and I'll never pay with my sats.
How come we haven't talked to them anyway? Story for another time. Business on air, not a good look for us. Gandalf, you were kind enough today to come on. We asked you because you are putting together what seems to be widely regarded as the best BIP 119 resource, the CTV resource that everyone's talking about. It's our first story tonight. Instead of me and Len butchering all this stuff, tell us about CTV BIP 119. What's the deal, man?
Yeah, so it's for those that don't know, a BIP is a Bitcoin Improvement Proposal. So something like Taproot would have been a BIP, and it kind of, there's a very messy sort of consensus in Bitcoin where devs and different parties look at the proposal and decide whether they want to implement it into the base layer. And then when I guess there's like widely regarded to be support for the BIP, it gets merged into Bitcoin Core and it becomes part of the protocol. So a core developer called Jeremy Rubin he actually finished working on BIP 119 like 2.5 years ago. It's apparently, and by the way, I should caveat everything I'm saying by I'm not technical at all. I'm still doing my research, and this is why I put bip119.com together, was just to basically list all resources that I've been reading and that people are sending me in one place so that everyone can go and do their own research. Don't trust me. Anything I say, like there's a good chance I'm wrong and I don't know what I'm talking about.
Trusting a guy who shows up for public appearances in a fucking wizard costume, regardless of what the content is.
100%. Dude, I'm getting tagged in like tweets asking about BIP 119 with like, it's like Adam Back, Luke Dash Jr. and Bitcoin Gandalf. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just putting the resources together for everyone. But basically, it's a BIP that adds some covenant functionality to Bitcoin. It's probably not worth me going into the details of what you can do with it because I'll probably butcher it. But it's like, it allows you to do stuff. It's basically like very, very simple smart contracts, I think the main issue that we're seeing is that a lot of people don't understand what BIP 119 is. It seems to have kind of like snuck in out of nowhere. And I think the community's reaction is fear because they don't understand it.
That's what I was going to ask you. How come this came out, as you mentioned, out of nowhere? It's not like this is something that has just been recently developed. You touched on it's been around for 2 years and change. I actually listened to Jeremy talking to Marty Bent 2 years ago. It was January 2020. So this is not something that is rather new. It's been floating around for some time. But why is there so much hoopla around it at this particular time?
So what's happened is that Jeremy's like moving towards pushing for activation of it. So pushing for it to be implemented into Bitcoin Core via a speedy trial type, like that's what happened with Taproot. It's called speedy trial activation, where the miners signal whether they're for or against, or whether they're ready to implement the BIP or not. And so the history, as I understand it, is the code's been ready for 2 or 2.5 years or something. I think it was sort of like put off because everyone wanted to focus on getting Taproot into Bitcoin. And by the way, from what I understand, you know, for the people who are fearful of the, you know, the it introducing further complexity or security issues to Bitcoin, like from what I understand, Taproot was a much more technically complex thing to implement than CTV. I'm not saying CTV is safe or not. I'm just saying from a technical perspective, Taproot was much more complex. But yeah, so I think it was pushed to the side because the community just kind of wanted to focus on Taproot. And by the way, I use this term like community, learning about Bitcoin consensus and stuff. There's no like, from what I understand, there doesn't seem to be a very clear, like there's no guideline, there's no framework for how to implement stuff into Bitcoin. It's kind of like a very messy political process, which is very, if people want to get into it, like the resources that are in bit119.com, and they can also check out Jeremy's website, which is utxos.org. You can dive like very deep down the rabbit hole of just like how Bitcoin development works and consensus and everything else. I think after Taproot, Jeremy's sort of moved to trying to get Bit119 implemented into Bitcoin, and he released a blog post maybe 10 or so days ago, where he gave a sort of timeline for activation, and it was like super quick. I think he proposed speedy trial to start on the 5th of May, if I'm not mistaken.
So he's rescinded that. So today there was a post on the Bitcoin developer at email trail, and he basically said he's not advancing the speedy trial activation. So he's basically, I'm not sure if he's done an about face, but he's clearly stated he doesn't want to go ahead with the speedy trial activation. I don't know if this is something new.
He'd already said this a few days ago as well, but I think what's happening is because it seems for some people, you know, it's a case of perspectives. Jeremy's perspective, this has been around for 2.5 years, or he's been waiting to try and see if he can get this implemented into Bitcoin for 2.5 years. For most other people that aren't like closely following Bitcoin development, this is like completely brand new. And I think like in Bitcoin, we have this, I guess like this mantra that like we want to keep the base layer as simple as possible and not mess with it too much, right? So I think we default to like no changes unless they seem to be like essential to Bitcoin survival or existence. And I don't think enough people understand what Bit119 is, or if they do are convinced that it's essential for Bitcoin to continue as it is now. And then Jeremy's push to try and get it activated on the timeline that he gave in his blog post that he released 10 days ago has just created this sort of like huge eruption of discussion around it. And I think, I don't want to speak for him, but there is a case being made by those who are against not necessarily against Bit119, but against the timeline that's been proposed and the activation method. They're saying like there's no point in trying to push this through like this when it's seemingly going to create potentially a civil war in Bitcoin and maybe like a sort of another fork situation. So that's not good for anyone. It's not good. Yeah. If there was another civil war in Bitcoin, like in 2017, it wouldn't be good for anyone, including the people trying to push changes. So I think it's possible that Jeremy's realized this.
This is the thing I was going to mention, Gandalf, that to me, you know, to your point about the sort of technical chops of BIP119 and whether or not it's, you know, for example, more complex than Taproot or more complex than other past improvements have been, it seems to me that the real controversy is about speedy trial. Speedy trial was, you know, I think also controversial during Taproot, if I recall. And to your point about people who have been in the space for a long time, you know, not really knowing about CTV in a way they knew about Taproot, that plus the sort of push, or, you know, maybe as you said, like maybe he's kind of rescinded that or is considering his timeline again. the push for speedy trial really is what's getting people's knickers in a knot, it seems like to me. So I want to talk a bit about the resources you put together here, Gandalf. I have it on the screen. I know you're probably on your phone, so you can't see, but do you want to talk a bit about where you got some of this stuff? What, you know, what made you decide to put this together? Because this is a great resource. I was looking at this before the show. I think everyone who's watching and listening should check it out as well. It's a great place to find, like you mentioned, experts talking about technical subjects in a way that might be digestible for you. So what made you want to do this?
So I have this habit of like buying domains. Whenever I see like something on Twitter, I that like stands out or like that might be meme worthy or that, you know, I just look for the, I look and see if there's a domain for it and I buy it. So I think I had looked at, I think when I first heard about Bip119, I actually went and I was like, oh, it'd be funny if I could buy bip69420.com. But that was taken, right? So, and then I kind of left it. And then again, it popped up and I went, okay, I'll check if Bip119 is available. Because I think actually there's a guy who has, who's like trying to push, I think it's Bip300 or something, or there's a Bip in the 300s and the guy has his URL. Has the URL for it. So I'd seen that on his bio. So when the Bip119 really hit my radar, I went to have a look and Bip119.com was free. So I bought it and I bought Bip69 and Bip420.com. And then just as I was like, I was, you know, I have these things to like, oh, I'll make this project or I'll build this website or whatever. Anyway, Bip119 is like, well, I'm trying to learn to code. So I was like, fuck it. I'm going to just make a really simple just HTML only like list of links that I'm using to learn about Bip119. I couldn't get the HTML file to update on my web hosting service. So I ended up like going over to a different site builder that I use. But yeah, I just thought like it would be useful to have a place where I put together everything I'm reading in case it's useful for other people to learn as well. Like I figured there was so much discussion about it and so many people who are like asking people were, a couple of times I tweeted about it, people were asking me what it was. And so there's obviously this thirst for knowledge and wanting to understand. And I was in that same position as well. So I just figured like, if I put this website up, it will be useful for some people. I'm already going through all the resources as well. All it takes is for me to copy and paste some links onto a website and just organize it a little bit. There was demand for it because it got shared a lot, and now I have Brains very kindly supporting the work on the website as well, which is amazing. I think they just want to make sure they want to foster, you know, the information to be available so that people can research and make up their own minds. So that's why they're supporting the project, which is amazing.
And speaking of Brains, I ordered an S9 which has the Brains firmware preloaded on it, so I'm going to be so happy to plug that sucker in. But going back to
let's BIP, go.
Let's fucking go, guys. But in terms of BIP119, in terms of the actually knowledge of it, grasping the concept of it, it seems to be rather complex, because when I get into it and I scratch a surface, I realize I know fuck all. There's so much more I have to learn about this and Bitcoin itself. It seems to be a rabbit hole that even if you do get to the end of it, you're going to find another tunnel that you have to follow, and you just never truly find the end. And you get so much FUD around this. I'm not sure if you saw the video from Andreas Antonopoulos, but he posted a video not too long ago talking about his opinion of BIP119 and what he perceives, what are the implementation, what it's going to be doing for Bitcoin. But then on the other side, you hear Shinobi, or you read Shinobi, he's not discounting everything Andreas is saying, but he's laying it out in a different point of view. And it seems like Andreas is kind of neutral, maybe negative on this, but people like Shinobi, who I respect quite a bit, he's very pro BIP119. If this reaches like to a point where we have to have consensus, will we ever have consensus? Because nobody's really going to grasp what the heck is BIP119?
No, I think, I'm not sure if we'll have consensus on it, but I think that if you give people, now that it's on the radar of most Bitcoiners, if you give them enough time to figure things out and I guess you let some of the people, because, you know, we do have this mantra of don't trust, verify, but we do trust. The truth is we do trust. I mean, we have to, like, a lot of us can't read the the core code. So we trust people that we think know what they're talking about to sort of guide us along the, like, should this, is this good or is this bad? So I think we need, we also need those people to feel like they've had enough time to review and say yay or nay to it. So I think it's just a matter of giving it a bit more time. And then, because I don't think, so from what I understand, the actual, the BIP and the technical aspect of it is like very simple and not very controversial at all. It's been more the timeline, and there are also considerations around, there's other BIPs that could implement what CTV can do, plus more complicated or useful covenant or other covenants that could be used for other things. So there's a case for like saying, well, let's not, like, let's, we can get CTV's functionality in another BIP that also does some other stuff. So let's not implement BIP 119. Mm. Let's implement this other BIP that does the same thing, because otherwise the other BIP will obsolete BIP 119. So there's no point in implementing it at this stage, especially when there's like no, I guess, no rush. There's no like killer functionality that Bitcoin can't live without in CTV.
This has been
I think Jeremy would argue otherwise, that there is functionality that is, he's building a case for why there is functionality that's highly in demand by key players like exchanges and stuff like that in CTV. And you can go read his blog, and he has explainers on the different things that CTV would allow, including, he claims, like some decentralized mining pools, like interesting uses of vaults and stuff like that. Batching transactions for exchanges.
Yeah, he makes a few compelling cases, and actually to that end, you know, on the Green Candle space on Friday, I was surprised to see him pop in. I guess you guys follow each other, and so when you got on stage and we changed the title, you know, for him to be doing the rounds like that, though he didn't get on stage, he did try and get the word out there that he was doing a space on BIP 119 at a different time. Who's willing to discuss his ideas for the protocol. I do like that. You know, the one thing I guess I would just add, Gandalf, because I don't want to keep you too long. God knows what time it is over there. But I like the tweet you put out the other day, and you've kind of touched on it a little bit tonight. This knowledge go up, because you're a guy who obviously has proven to be, you know, like autistically curious, I guess, building out these websites and buying domains to do these little projects. And you know, it's good, because I think about a guy like me who's like not technical at all, can't read the code, don't know much about the real, you know, deep dive technical aspects of the protocol. And you know, like I said, I was going through this this website, and I thought, man, it's really good to see something like this that's neutral in its approach, right? You're just providing resources, and it seems to me like you want the arguments on both sides. So, you know, I want to know what you think about other resources like this that we could use. Is there other resources like this that, you know, I'm not saying you have to do it, but something like Taproot, for example, I don't think had a simple to digest list of resources the same way you've put together for this. What other topics you think would be good to have a website like this for in Bitcoin?
God, I mean, what about like just Bitcoin itself? They're like, I guess like we have the Bitcoin standard to explain like the monetary side of Bitcoin, but I don't think there's a definitive like resource that is like you send someone here and they will get Bitcoin. There's like a myriad of different books and podcasts or a mixture of different things that you send. Like, I guess if you tweet out and ask someone like, hey, what's your favorite like sort of orange pilling resource, you'll get like 100 answers, and they like 99 of them will be different, or different mixes of like the same 5 to 10 things. So I think for Bitcoin itself, something, there still needs to be a like a definitive thing that explains Bitcoin in a way that, like, the technical aspects of it and the monetary side of it as well. A very difficult task though.
One last question for me. Where do you think we're going to be going from here with this?
With BIP 119?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, I think Jeremy standing down on the timeline is good. I think as long as like the community stays interested in learning more about it, I guess there'll be a decision as to whether I guess this will be mostly the devs that will make this call and then share what they've decided and see if the community agrees or disagrees or wants to trust them or not trust them. But I think there'll be a discussion around like which of these like covenant adding BIPs the devs should work on, and then they will work on that, and that will at some point get implemented.
Okay, that's great. Gandalf, tell people where they can find you, where they can find the website. And you know, if you're listening or watching, there's a Lightning support option on the website. I highly recommend it. I'm going to finally put some sats in a Lightning wallet and send them over to the wizard for this work. Not you. You're not getting any more sats. But we're going to send to the wizard. Gandalf, tell us about where they can find you on the website.
Yeah, so the website's BIP119.com. You can find me on Twitter at BTCGandalf. You can also go and check out brains.com. They're very kindly supporting me. Like, this went from like me putting a few links on a website, and like now, so I don't know if you guys saw it, but Jeremy has like a table on his website of people like that he claims are supporting the BIP. And I'm in the CTV, I'm in the CTV Telegram group, and Adam Back's in there, you know, battling. They're having a heated discussion, battling it out. And he was saying it's obviously biased for Jeremy to have a table of people supporting his BIP. So I offered up BIP119.com as a place where anyone can. I haven't built the functionality in yet because I'm on this long weekend. But when I get back, I'm going to build in functionality so that anyone can go in and submit their thoughts on BIP119 either anonymously or under their own name. And I'll try to tally that up as well, because I actually try to make a table of people who were, Jeremy had his four, so I thought we better build one that's against. And I put four people in it, and I already got shit from one person saying, I'm not actually against BIP119. You put me in there. I'm linking to like tweets where they're talking about stuff. I obviously misinterpreted something as being against it when it wasn't. It's quite complex. So I figured I'd just let the actual people themselves, you know, submit their thoughts if they want to. And that way I'm not filtering or making mistakes or malinterpreting something. I want to keep it as neutral as possible. I want to give the source material. I don't want to speak for anyone. And I don't want to say, you know, yay or nay yet, because I'm still doing research to understand.
I want a list of names of people that are giving you a hard time. I could put them on my wall back here. I want names, man. You don't have to do it right now, but give it to me privately. We will take care of this one person at a time.
No, they won't give me. I misinterpreted their tweet. But yeah, anyway, it's all good.
You crush it, man. Gandalf, thanks for your time, brother. Check out BIP119.com. A mission honorable enough to match the NIM of the man who created it. So thanks again, man. Take care of yourself. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, all right?
Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it. Take care.
Take care.
Cheers, buddy. Len, that's a lot of info there. We got, yeah. You know, he's got a lot of good stuff to say. And, you know, I think he's as usual, okay, the humble Gandalf underselling his own technical knowledge. He knows quite a bit about this stuff. He may not know how to read or write code yet, but he is one of my trusted sources for sure. And he was even before we're kind of as tight as we are now. So good for him. Glad to see that he's done that and he's getting a lot of support. And I highly recommend if you're watching the show, check it out, man. BIP119.com. Have a look, have a read, have a watch there. Lots of videos. I was actually watching Jeremy present at MIT earlier today for about 15 minutes before I realized I was in way over my head. But you know, it says something about immersion, Len. If you really get into something and don't just back off the first time you don't understand a term or you don't understand a mechanism, you're going to learn really quickly. I think Gandalf's done that.
It's time to quit our day jobs and go full in Bitcoin. I think it's time, Joey. It's just what time to do that.
You're already basically there. I don't want to like, you know, damn you with your employer, but he's been a long time on the show.
Come on.
What's next? Well, there's still,
you know, we got to change the mood here. It was a little bit of a somber discussion with Gandalf. We got to up it a little bit now. Let's talk about student debts.
Love
it. This is actually it's a hot topic right now, and I'm not sure if our fans are following it as well, but there's some talk in the United States that they might go ahead and forgive some student debts. And the total amount of student debts that are outstanding, the number varies from what I see between $1.6 trillion and $1.75 trillion. And that's about 46 million Americans that have student loans. It's a massive amount of money for a large number of people. And they're talking right now, they're going to be canceling or at least forgiving some of the debt. The number being thrown around could be as low as $10,000 and as high as $50,000. They don't want to go beyond $50,000 because there are a lot of people out there that have student loans that they have masters and doctorates, and they're the ones that have accumulated debt well beyond $50,000, and forgiving their debt, they're the people that are probably going to be earning a large salary. So it just doesn't make sense. But this all stems from the problem that they are issuing student loans. And as a result, the schools themselves, from what I understand, they're gaming the system. They are upping the amount of the cost for tuition. I actually have a chart here in front of me. And the tuition cost, even adjusted for inflation, has gone up $10,000 in the past 20-something years, 22 years. That's a lot. It's gone up. And that's around 30% increase, too, in terms of overall. That's an incredible amount of increase that is being tacked on for the students. They're the ones that are ultimately paying for it. So while I understand that they did get into these loans and they have to pay it off, I feel for them because they are going to school, and the school themselves, they are gaming the system and pass it and asking them to pay a higher fee. And that's as a result of these student loans, because they understand that they have access to the student loans, they have access to more money. Why not charge more? Schools are businesses. It's funny though, because now they're talking about the canceling of the debt. Even on Wall Street Bets, one guy was talking about just signing up to a community college, getting 0.5 credit, taking the $10,000 and rolling it into the market and getting it wiped off the books.
Are you going to do, you're doing show research on WSB now? That's
I do nice. Show research everywhere. No rock is uncovered. So it's incredible. And they are taking this to the Biden administration. It's more of a political hot potato. And they're saying it's more of a race issue. And there may be some truth to this, because almost 50% of the people that have debt in excess of $40,000 are deemed to be Black Americans. So, and this is much, much different to say Asian Americans, which is around 10-15%, White Americans around 20%. So the Black Americans, for whatever reason, they have a much higher debt burden that they're carrying. And this is obviously turning into a political hot potato for them. But if we could just go back, the total amount of debt out there for schools, I mentioned, is 1.6 to 1.75 trillion. These are astounding numbers. The United States only rakes in around $4 trillion in revenue from taxes. That's incredible. Like if you just do the comparison, if they're going to wipe off, say, $1 trillion, that's one quarter of all the revenue that the United States generates in taxes. So that money that could be earmarked towards building railroads, improving the deep water seaports, airports, improving interstates, maybe lowering taxes, paying off debt, it's not going to happen. It's going to be given to a group of individuals that they signed an agreement. They signed an agreement saying that they would pay this back. And it's a loan. And they're going to get it forgiven. And who's going to be taking the cost of all this? It would be the greater population. Man, it's just tacking on more and more onto the overall debt. And it's going to obliterate the U.S. dollar. Ultimately, too, there's something else we're not considering here. There's no lesson learned. What do we learn from all this? If you screw up, Uncle Sam is going to come around and bail you out. What happens the next time when your mortgages are up and you can't pay that? Is Uncle Sam going to come around and pay for that as well? I don't know. I see both sides of the argument, but whatever happens here, Joey, you're either going to screw over a bunch of young people, or you're going to screw over the greater population, and the U.S. dollar is going to suffer as a result. Keep buying Bitcoin. That's the only real outcome here.
Isn't it true, Len, that like that this is an example of another government program where the backstop is the Burr machine, And what we see is a absolutely huge bubble being blown over the course of a few decades. I'm not lying about that, right? So let's pull back here a bit. We'll take the 30,000 foot view. Okay. The US government started guaranteeing student loans in 1965. They called that program the Federal Family Education Loan Program. Incredible stuff, honestly, Len. The naming mechanism for these things. I remember we were talking to Tom and Nick on their show on Your Life, Your Terms. They were talking about the sort of like faux naming for basically mortgage bailouts that are coming to Canada at some point in the next cycle. This is a great example of this, right? Federal Family Education Loan Program is the furthest thing from what these loans actually did and what they actually do now. Basically, if you make the capital available for education without much in the way of defining or quantifying what education should look like, what the outcome of that education should be, whether or not the job you get is going to make money or not make money, what you get is an increase in the number of people providing education, in quotes, for people who are listening. And, you know, if you look at 65 in the States, that program beginning lines up with a boom, both in private and public colleges as institutions, and also a boom in the price. I'll give you an example. In 69, the cost for a state college, so I think that's like a non-for-profit or not-for-profit college, was $1,200 per year. That's room, board, tuition, and fees. In 2020, the average cost is $21,000 a year. Huge jump, huge jump. In the private college sector, it was $2,500 a year in 69-70. Do you know how much it costs now to go to college at a private, like a private for-profit institution in the States, average?
I'll guess 85, and that's a total guess.
$46K per year.
Oh, so, I'm way off.
Yeah, I mean, it's still pretty high, right? I was saying to one of the girls at Physio today, we were talking about this exact thing. And I went to school in 2005, I started. It cost me $4,000 to live and go to school.
What year, what year was that?
05.
So we're talking only 17 years difference. And it's Canadian fucking, dollars at that.
Yeah, it's fucking bonkers now. It's bonkers. But I don't know what Brock University charges now for tuition for like an undergrad, whatever, BA. But it's got to be at least $7,000 or $8,000. It's probably doubled, right? It's probably gone up 100% in 15 years.
Are you maybe looking it up? Yeah, I'm looking it up right now.
Okay, you look it up. I'll keep talking. So the problem that we see here is, you know, and it's not the only place we see it, right? If a school can charge whatever it wants for quote unquote education, okay, then you're going to get a monster bubble because everyone is going to start offering education at a higher level if it's paid for. I'll give you another example where you see this, okay? For example, first-time home buyers benefits here in Canada where you save the property tax, for example, or save the land transfer fee or have other benefits if you're someone who's never signed a mortgage before. What do you think happens when the realtors and the sellers find out that the buyers are getting $5,000 or $10,000 in credit? They just jacked the price up $10,000 and the government pays for the difference. Like, yeah. It's unbelievable that people don't understand this at all. It blows my fucking mind. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
So here's the numbers just to give you a heads up.
Okay, yeah, for Brock University, my alma mater, great school.
And I'm giving you the most expensive. This is going to be a business or computer science degree. Yeah. It's $8,300 flat fee.
Oh my god! And that's without residence, right?
Correct. And it's with no books and everything. And the cheapest I could find for arts or science, it's $6,031.
That's crazy. So you're spending $10,000 at least if you live there, basically $6,000.
Oh, way more.
Board. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so whatever. It's at least ten. So it's gone up by more than 100% in the you know 15 years since I started. 17 years since I started. God, I can't believe it's been that long. Anyway. So Len, I have some conflicting numbers here with some of the stuff you said, but I'm going to rip them off anyways. I got this from listening to the All In podcast, where Chamath actually is a UWaterloo alum. So if you know whether you like Chamath or don't like Chamath, or whether you think those guys are too liberal on some topics, too conservative on others, they all agreed on this, which I think speaks to the nature of the problem. But I'll let you listen on your own some other time. Let's talk about some of these numbers. About 15% of American adults have loans from school, federally guaranteed loans, when they receive them, that they will never be able to pay off at their current earnings rate with their certification, diploma, degree, whatever that they got from their post-secondary institution of choice. If people want to get rid of student loan amounts, if they want to do a debt jubilee, which by the way, another example of like how much tread does the empire have left on the tires? You don't see debt jubilees in economies that are strong with governments that are, you know, that are looking into the future. You see this with people who are short-term thinkers and don't understand economics. But anyway, I don't think I'm making any I don't think I'm breaking any news there. The thing is that you can't get rid of the debt without getting rid of the thing that causes the bubble in the first place, because the debts will just continue to accumulate, right? And this is not the only sector where we see this. I already mentioned housing here, which is a great example. I think it's really a good example of politically motivated help programs that just add to the cost of homes. And again, it's like a lowest common denominator thing. You think you're getting a good deal, but you're really not, right? You're getting sort of ripped off in a different way at a different corner of your trip. So that's one. Another one that I think is under discussed here in Canada, especially, is pharma and medical services. And because the government, you know, guarantees those services for Canadians, what do we see? What we see is a huge lack in the quality of service, quality of output from the healthcare system. We saw this during COVID. You can say whatever you want about lockdowns or whatever, but the crux, the fulcrum of the decision-making was always hospital capacity, was always hospital numbers. And the other thing, the other place you see it is in pharma. They charge a ton of money in the States and in Canada for pharmaceuticals unless you have coverage. And you are paying those prices because the money is guaranteed by the government when it goes to those private entities. Okay. So I don't hold the private entities accountable for this. They're doing exactly what anyone in that incentive structure would do in their position in the chain. They would jack up the prices knowing that the money is guaranteed no matter how high they make the cost. And then we didn't even get into price fixing and things of that nature, which I am positive is going on in housing, in education, and in these other sectors as well. Let's keep going. The Atlantic had an article on who wins with debt forgiveness, student debt forgiveness. And it turns out that about 13% of the population carries federal loan debt from education, from the education system. And 37% of the total debt is made up by grad students. Now, this may be a bit of a reach, but I look at that number and I think, are you telling me that these people graduated from their undergrad program, couldn't get jobs that enabled them to go out into the workforce and make decent money? And so instead of learning their lesson, they went back to the well, presumably took out more money in the same discipline or like adjacent discipline, and like now make up almost a half, like 37% is a ton, man, for just graduate programs. I don't think a lot of people are doing graduate programs. At least they weren't when I was a little younger.
A lot more doing it now.
Well, like clearly yeah, they are, because the undergrad degrees are not cutting it anymore, mm-hmm, right? That's the reason. I think probably I would have learned that lesson, but I don't know. To your point earlier, Len, about the total debt student loan is about $1.6 trillion. To give you an idea of how big or small that is, depending on how you feel about that number, there's about $10 trillion in American mortgage debt. So it's about 10%, 16%, I guess, of the total debt. Now, to your point about the race issue and whether or not this is a sort of Democrat-friendly issue for the midterms, only, I don't know the exact number, but it says that, you know, the majority of the debt is held by white borrowers. So you'd be helping whites more than non-whites, regardless of how you spin non-whites or slice non-whites. That's the story. According to the Atlantic article, here's an interesting point. 43% of the voters who voted for Biden in 2020 have federal student loan debt. That's a pretty big number. Sure. You got to keep those people happy, right? So to me, this is clearly politically motivated. I know a number of people in the chat are saying the same thing. So I think it's, you know, it's one thing that's politically motivated. I think the other side of it is that this is effectively a stimulus. I talked about this with the Woke Antidote guys when they came on. Highly recommend you listen to that show because they're American. They have a little bit of insight to this and they're a little younger than us too. So they just came out of that system. I think both of them are carrying some student loan debt and have very strong feelings on this topic that may surprise you. So it's not only that they're canceling the debt line, it's that the debt is effectively a stimulus. It's $10,000 in, you know, what I think most people with student loan debt, unfortunately, would consider new capital, right? If I wipe $10,000 off your debt, I think probably most people, I may even include myself in this. I'd like to think I'm smarter than this, but honestly, the good vibes might turn my decision-making to mush. I'd probably go spend a bit of that money on something stupid, right? Even though I didn't really get any new money, I just have lower interest payments and a lower total debt burden, right? But I would suggest to you as well, and this is my absolute hottest take, okay? I thought about a way to phrase this diplomatically in the shower today, when I was walking my dog today, on the way to physio today. I don't have one. I'll just say that if student debt is what's holding you back from being successful in life, forgiving that student debt's not going to make a difference. You're probably still going to be some kind of misfit anyways. Mm-hmm. I think that's honestly fair to say. I hate saying it, but I think it's fair to say. The degrees at the end of the day that these kids are getting are worthless because education has no quantifiers. There's no loan underwriting on these things, Len. Every loan, every insurance policy, everything where you're expecting some return is underwritten for risk, for the likelihood that you're going to have that loan paid back or that the loan is going to provide some value. And they don't do that in this sector at all. In fact, they do the opposite. They indiscriminately hand out the money and hope that it comes back to them. And if they don't do it, that's all there is to it. They wait for debt forgiveness, I guess. Now, a couple things I'll mention here before I pass back to you if you have any thoughts. You know how much $10,000 per student loan outstanding in the States is as a percentage of the GDP of the United States?
No.
2.5%.
What does that equate to? Is it around $600 to $800 billion?
It's a lot.
No,
it's
but what a was lot. It? I'm curious. What is $10,000?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Well, you can do the math because it's 40. It's going to be like $460 billion, isn't it? Is that the number?
It's crazy. Yeah. It's a crazy high number, and that's going to be inflationary. And then, of course, like I said, without a model for recovery and a model for preventing the same thing from happening again, wiping these debts off is nuts. It's nuts. There's just no point. And again, like I said, my hottest take tonight is going to be that if student loans are the thing keeping you back, you probably are just not cut out for the life you think you're cut out for, the life you were convinced you were cut out for when you were taking your undergraduate studies, your undergraduate degree. Unfortunately, that's just the nature of the game, I think. Yeah, anyway, I'll pass to you. What do you think?
I think a lot of these young people, because I'm going to just classify them as young people. That's what they are. They've been screwed in a number of different ways because number one, they've been told they have to go to school to make ends meet going forward. Number two, they take degrees that, as you mentioned, are worthless. And there are a lot of them that are like that. The schools, they're not giving them enough information to show what's going to happen once they graduate. What are they going to be able to do with this degree? Are they going to find a job? If they do find a job, in what field? How much are they going to make? They don't give a shit. Schools are just a business. Schools are there just to make money. They don't give a fuck about the students. And that's sad. I wish that somehow the government could get involved and force the schools to give out, or not give out, to only issue certain amount of degrees per category, make more STEM, make less arts type. And this way you could force people to not always get these arts degrees that just don't get them anything in the end.
Right.
In the end, they have no transferable skills that's going to help them be successful in life. They go into STEM, even then there's no guarantee, but you are increasing the odds. So they have to do something with the schools because these young kids, they are getting fucked over as a result of this. They have this idea. They get these dreams in their head. They've been told all their life, you got to do this. And they do it. And what do they get in the end? A fucking huge debt and a job degree that's fucking worthless because there's no jobs in that particular field. I feel for them. They didn't make the right decisions. I mean,
they were fooled. They were taken advantage of, right?
Yeah. And that's why, I mean, I see both sides of the argument. I see forgiving it is definitely the wrong thing. You're giving the wrong message and you're punishing the greater population. But the flip side, these people, they got fucked over. And even if they are forgiven this loan, they're still fucked because what are they left with? An economy that is just in shambles. But yeah. There's one good thing about this, and I'm grasping for straws here. Their debt is being inflated away. And I'm grasping right here, but that's the only silver lining they could get out of this thing.
It is being inflated away. The other thing I would say, and Defiant and Daniela, Randall, you guys are all like Dave as well, just absolutely hopping in the chat today with good commentary. The other thing I'll say, Len, is that like, is it really fair for the tradesman who got out of school, started working for 80K, to have to now pay through both inflation and presumably through higher tax rate or some other, sort of punitive measure for the, underwater basket weaving degree of some coastal elite teenager whose parents, decided it was a good idea for them to go to school for a worthless piece of paper. It's ridiculous. It's honestly ridiculous. And I think that a lot of people now are like talking about sort of how ridiculous it is and how inflationary it could be. I think the only thing we're waiting for, Len, as far as like next week's No Coiner of the Week, is which Democratic politician is going to get up on the podium and tell everyone that it's actually going to be free to forgive $1 trillion in student debt, or that it's already paid for? Is it going to be Pelosi? She's busy in Ukraine right now, I think, right?
Yeah, she is.
Hands over there.
Yeah.
So maybe it'll be someone else. I don't know. Schumer, what's he doing these days? Always looks too tan, that guy. Can't trust the guy. The guy always looks too tan.
The way I understand it too, the way they administer the loans, and forgive me if I'm wrong on this, because obviously I'm not American, nor do I attend school there, is when you get the loan goes to the school. Now, if you bail out on a couple of courses, they'll just cut you the check. The school cuts you the check right there and then, and they don't give the money back to the federal government that issued the loan to begin with. So the students, they get this free money. I was reading on some forums that a lot of people they knew in the past, they took the money and they went on vacation, they went spring break, or they bought an Xbox or whatever. So it's poor decisions too. That's another thing that has to be taken into consideration. And it's not just, and you talked about the tradesperson. Is it fair for that person if they, you know, graduated, made 80K and paid off their debt? It's also people
But it's not even just, yeah. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead. You're going to say exactly what I'm thinking.
Yeah. I mean, it's the people that did the right thing. They went to school, they got their degree, but they paid it back. They went during the summertime, they worked, they didn't take stupid, they didn't make stupid decisions. And they paid it back. Why should they suffer? I mean, it's ridiculous. I see both sides of the argument here. There's no clear winner. Who's going to be the loser here? You talked about it many times. It's the midterms. It's the Democrats during the midterms. They're going to suffer hard. Not because of this. This is just another drop in the bucket. But they're the ones that are going to be the ultimate losers, I think.
I just see stuff like this, like to sort of bring the focus back to Bitcoin. I see stuff like this and I think these are the same people who want to govern the way that your money is handled. At a federal level, they want to govern the amount of taxes you pay. They want to govern the amount of inflation you should expect to see, that you should be happy with. Well, I mean, you look at this stuff and you think, why would you not buy Bitcoin? You know, like even like the equities markets are wobbling these days too, as I am finding out in a major way, thanks to my Amazon position over the last 2 weeks. But like, man, I just think about the sort of Gell-Mann amnesia people have. Like everyone realizes this is a bad idea. This is an inflationary policy that's being spun as, you know, a jubilee or something that's American, that's going to help people find the American way of life or the American dream, whatever. And then we're going to forget about it and say that definitely the inflation numbers are Gucci. Definitely the, you know, predictions for the economic growth are Gucci. I'm sure you got the negative GDP quarter in the B-side stories. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, Len, these guys are wrong about everything. They're literally wrong about everything. Why would you not try and at least get some of your money, some of your assets, some of your time and energy out of that system with Bitcoin? If you know, it, to me, it's never been more obvious. And I really hope this is hitting home with people because, man, are you going to find out the hard way, I think, in the next year that inflation's getting hot, really hot. And, you know, I'll save this for the GDP story, actually, but I got more to say about like the monetary policy and the fiscal response that I think we're going to see in the States before the end of 2022. I would be buckled up for that.
Yeah. And the people that you're saying that they should buy Bitcoin, it was mentioned on the Tom and Nick podcast, the people that they just don't have focuses on other things that are more pressing. So they
because it has to be.
Yeah.
It's like a shitty situation. Like you don't have the bandwidth to know. You know something is wrong and you're blaming. I said this a million times because this is near and dear to me. You know something is wrong and you're blaming yourself when it's not your fault. And it's not fair.
It's a
not
system.
Good.
And we could blame the people in power right now. You could blame the Powells and the Biden and everything. But they are just a chain in its link. Everybody before them are also guilty of bringing us to this point. It's not like things were great before they got here.
Right.
Things were bad. It was going to oblivion. It happened much quicker under COVID. So we can't just lay blame on those guys, the current people in power. They are to blame, but they're not the people totally to blame. Other people too. We can't discount that. That's just my.
I'm with you. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. That's good. I like talking about this stuff. It's too bad that we are visiting these sorts of topics frequently now, the sort of dumb policies, but it sounds like we're going to be visiting this at least one or two more times tonight. So what's next?
Yeah, well, you know, that's it for the A block, because we between that and Gandalf, it took up a lot of our time. So transitioning to the Canadian side of things, and I want to first give credit to Ethan Liu. He was talking about, I think this is the article that he was just tweeted about from the Globe and Mail. He didn't write it, from what I understand. It's the Ontario Security Commission's. They have plans over the next 3 years to strengthen oversight of crypto. Mm-hmm. And this report that they released, I'm not going to name everything in it, but I'm going to identify just a few things. So some of the actions they want to include, and I'm going to name three of them, is engage with crypto firms to complete the registration of approval process. That's fine. The second, identify and address non-compliance with security laws. And third is develop capabilities in crypto assets trading platform oversight. The second one is very, very telling to me. It says identify and address non-compliance with security laws. I'm wondering going forward if the OCS is going to drop the hammer on a lot of these digital tokens and assets, whatever the fuck you want to call them, because they are fucking securities. So I'm wondering if the OCS is really going to go after these exchanges. Is interesting. And the third is an appropriate balance is achieved in supporting novel businesses and fostering innovation and competitive capital markets, yada, yada, yada. The second one is...
Wait, I gotta stop you. I thought you just dropped off there and I thought I dropped off. And so I see in the chat here that I was live looking at my phone about to text you. I thought I dropped off. So we missed part of that story.
Do you want me to start from the very beginning?
No. You said you thought they were going to go after... potentially the security tokens.
The second is the item that they and the actions they want to attack is they want to look at these non-compliance with security laws. And the way I envision it is they're going to go after these shit coins that are fucking securities. So I have a feeling that the OCS is going to drop the
OSC,
hammer.
OSC.
OCS
is if you want to get high.
Cannabis. Yeah, sorry. OSC. Yeah. They're going to drop the hammer on these exchanges that sell stuff that are deemed to be securities. This is going to be really interesting how this plays out in front of us. And the second thing they were talking about is planned outcomes. Now I'll just go to the most interesting one is one of their outcomes they want to see is reduction of misleading information in crypto asset trading platform, advertising, marketing, and social media. So how are they going to determine what is misleading information? You're giving a lot of power to a particular agency here. In terms of determining what is misleading information, it's almost like that new department that was created. So I don't know how this is going to be done, how they're going to deal with this one, because it's a very gray area. But the first one is not so gray, is when they're going to be dealing with non-compliance and security laws. That is going to be scary. Is there XRP still being traded in any of the exchanges in North America or in Ontario? There's going to be a number of different digital assets, shitcoins that are deemed to be securities. And if you do hold it, watch out because you may not be able to sell it if the OSC decides to say fuck you because it's deemed to be security. So this is very interesting stuff. And thank you to Ethan Liu for pointing it out.
Yeah, we like Ethan. We got to get him back on. He's doing a lot of good work in the space from the traditional media side. He's one of the only, I think, trad media guys who I read and agree with more often than not, especially in the Bitcoin and crypto space. So Let's talk about this this sort of long leash that the OCS has given themselves to police misleading information on social media, on trading platforms, and I guess there's another platform that you mentioned too. I forget what it was, but you know, regardless, you know, Len, is it misinformation if an exchange like if BitBuy, you know, makes a tweet thread about the nature of inflation, the true inflationary numbers in Canada? And is that something that's going to be policed, you think?
Who the hell knows? Because it's such a gray area. So I don't know. Maybe not. The fuck do I know?
I'm curious about that. And I find myself more and more concerned about the information thing. I know it's fun to joke about the U.S. Ministry of Disinformation or whatever they called it, where they literally hired someone who pushed the Steele dossier, among other like insane conspiracy theories, also helped squash the Hunter Biden story. And I guess she sings show tunes on TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole there, because chances are we'll be hit with a misinformation tag or something, and we'll get the nice the tattoo on the bottom of the video. But anyway, the thing I would just say is that there seems to be a lot of effort here to do some good things, I think, by the OSC. Chief among them, in my view, we have to police securities like they're securities, because that's really something that's misleading to investors. And I agree with that. They need some support there. What they don't need is to be told they can't trade the stuff, right? Which I think has been their stance in the past. You can't buy Bitcoin. You can't buy Ethereum. We don't want you dealing with this other stuff. We're banning certain exchanges in Canada or in Ontario, which, by the way, basically means Canada. Ontario is the leader of those securities commissions. That's sort of the provincial stalwart, as it were. So like we I think more often than not have erred on the side of quote unquote caution. I don't think it's caution. I think it's meant to be sort of, defeating in terms of people's like spirit to find these assets and trade them. But I would settle for this more than I would settle for those other policies. That said, there's a lot of stuff wrapped up in here with some of the language you just mentioned, like this policing misinformation, or, you know, making sure exchanges can't promote things in a way that's not true. I'd be curious. I need to see an example of these things. One of the things that's always missing from these little bits of legislation, these little bits of press bait, is a rubric. Show me an example of a misinformation piece that needs to be removed from social media or removed from
Solana is decentralized.
Yeah, that's okay. That's an example I can get behind, right? But if I say Bitcoin is good for the environment, can I be reprimanded by these guys? Can the exchanges be reprimanded? I don't know. It's a good question. And a rubric would be nice. Again, I used to, like, before Bitcoin and way, like, definitely before we started doing the show and this stuff was in my face every week, I used to have a little more faith that stuff like the accredited investor rule made sense to keep people from making mistakes that were, you know, potentially life altering, right? With a sum of money that was too much for them to handle, too much for them to kind of stomach if things went south or sideways. Now, though, I think that all the time we're constantly erring on this. We're going to leave this open-ended and apply it as we see fit. And it's not just the OSC that's doing this. It's other institutions, other three-letter agencies, both here and abroad. It's a bit of a troubling trend. I think it's almost more troubling than the whole attack on Bitcoin at the moment. I think they may work hand in hand, but Twitter, for example, and some of the stuff that the exchanges post, it's good information a lot of the time. And I wouldn't say it's anti-government, but it's a different message than what you see from provincial and federal governments, again, here and abroad. And we need that. We need that second option, that second story, that other side of the coin. Without that, Len, like, what are we doing? What is the outcome going to be for, you know, rational people who want to take in both sides and make a decision for themselves? It's not a bright future.
There is none. You must listen to your overlords and do as they say.
True.
That is the only path forward.
Nice. So, well,
let's move on. Let's talk about our sponsor, ShakePay. And they received something called a SOC2 mm-hmm. Type 1 security attestation. And this is a standard for security verification. And they received this following audits that were based on principles of security, availability, and confidentiality. And this was these standards are set out by a couple of agencies, one the AICPA, and the second being the TSC. So this is rather good news. I this kind of slipped under the radar for me. But it just goes to show you that ShakePay, they are trying to do whatever it is that they can to make sure that they are protecting their customers. And with getting this, from what I understand, this is not a very easy type of attestation to get. So good on ShakePay for receiving it, because from what I understand, not many other exchanges in Canada has it. So if you have any questions to do with the security about ShakePay or anything like that, I mean, you could probably put it to rest, because this helps show that they are transparent and they're trying to achieve whatever it is to make sure everything on their exchange is secured. And so are your valuables on there. So cool stuff by ShakePay.
Very show sponsor, obviously, but we're going to be hard on them anyways. You should take your coins off of exchanges. Whatever your token of choice is on ShakePay, you shouldn't keep it there. That's got to be option number one. But I think they know that they're at sort of the top of the funnel for a lot of people. A lot of Canadians who buy Bitcoin for the first time use their service and don't have the, you know, sometimes the economic option to buy a hardware wallet, they're pretty expensive. They're about $100. And also maybe don't want to dive into the technology just yet, but like the idea of NGU and want to make sure that they're, you know, they have some skin in the game, right? When it comes to Bitcoin or Ethereum, I guess, if that's your token of choice. And if securing those tokens through SOC 2 is something the exchange can do and provide value to the customer with, I'm all for it. I think, you know, like we talked about earlier, some of the stuff exchanges put out, ShakePay, I think, has also done a good job talking about self-custody. They do Twitter spaces. The Discord for ShakePay's ShakePay service is always buzzing with a lot of good commentary. Some of it is about the holes that exchanges present as a security, you know, part of a security model, and they don't police it. They are, I think, true to the Bitcoin mission. That's why we brought them on as a sponsor. That's why they continue to sponsor the show. And I'm happy to see this, man. Honestly, I don't keep a lot of token on exchange. Like, I don't keep a lot of Bitcoin on ShakePay. I take it off with some frequency, but it's good to know that when I do have stuff on there, it's protected better than it is in some other places. So kudos to those guys.
Moving on, let's talk about a different exchange in Canada. Can we call them an exchange? Bull Bitcoin. They released three new features, but two of them in particular I want to focus on. Number one is now you have the ability to send e-transfers to anybody in Canada using only their email address or phone number, and this could be done within Bull Bitcoin ecosystem. And the second is you could sell Bitcoin to your balance or somebody else's balance, which is rather interesting that you're able to do that. I don't know anybody else that has the ability of selling Bitcoin into somebody else's balance from an exchange point of view in Canada. So that's really cool stuff that Bull Bitcoin is implementing these things. So yeah, kudos to them. They're doing their good stuff here for themselves. And we should get somebody back on their show to talk about their services, because could we get Francis, you think? He's dynamite, isn't
he's
he?
He's a fight. Firecracker. We might have to pull that episode down after the fact, as we've done with a few others. So we had Maciej on, Sevnik, yeah. their community manager, smart dude. They have a number of services that you can't get anywhere else, quite honestly. If you're looking to live your life on Bitcoin, they'll help you do it. They even, you'll remember, Len, from that episode, took seriously the escapees from Canada. And we're putting people together with folks who wanted to buy Canadian real estate and sell real estate abroad. So, you know, truly the full package there. Now, you tell me, Len, is this a way for people to get off their bank account with this service? It sounds like it's, you know, really pushing people to abandon their TD, RBC, whatever accounts and move to something resembling a Bitcoin standard, right? You're always immediately adjacent to Bitcoin if you're using this service, even if you're keeping some CAD. So It's interesting to see, man. I have used Bull a number of times. They do their coin join, obviously, after the buys, which is something I really appreciate. And Len, I got to say, like, I'm waiting for one of these exchanges to go all in and let me deposit my paycheck into their service. Let me use a cashback card or a satsback card, and maybe also a credit vehicle to pay some of these other bills, right? If one of these exchanges starts going this direction, like I just don't have a reason to stay with TD, right? It's very difficult. My wife may be a different story, but I think a lot of people are going to start looking at this and go, why am I, you know, like I, what's your, like, what is your, for example, okay, what is your fee on your checking account every month? Do you have a fee?
Yeah, I don't want to say too much, but we get very, very good fees. I'm not sure if we pay anything because of
you don't have to comment on anything any further.
Yeah,
I pay $30 a month for my checking account.
Yeah, I think we're near zero, if not zero.
That's nice. Good for you.
Yeah, take advantage of what you can.
Listen, before I flip my lid, what's next?
Let's talk about Pierre Poilievre.
Sure.
And he came up with a couple of real interesting promises this past week. And number one, he promised to ditch the CBDC that's being developed by the Bank of Canada. I'm wondering if he can do that, even if he is the prime minister, because given that the Bank of Canada is kind of an arm's length type entity. Mm-hmm. But the second is, he says that he will institute an audit of the central bank. He will ask that the auditor do an audit of the central bank. From what I understand, what's the purpose of that? It seems like he's trying to get clout with people by doing so because of the excessive money printing that was done in the past few years. If an audit is done, do they have to honor whatever decisions or recommendations they make? Because they can still do what they want, right? Like, you audit it, they may say, you know, you should do this, do that. But the auditor can say, fuck you. Oh, sorry. The bank account can say, fuck you to the auditor, because they don't have to honor it, right? So the one item is, you know, ditching the central banks. I like it. I'm not sure if you could do it. But second, auditing the central bank, what the hell is this? This doesn't make sense to me. It's just, I don't know. Interesting stuff, but for me, it's a little bit shake my head. But again, I'm just a pleb sitting in a basement in front of a camera. I could be totally wrong. He's you know, he's in politics. He knows better than I do in terms of this stuff. But yeah, what are your thoughts, Joey?
I have no comment really, because I don't know enough about that mechanism. I'll say that auditing central banks is not an original idea. You know, everyone's favorite libertarian Ron Paul famously wanted to audit the Federal Reserve for basically his entire political career. I don't think he'll live to see the day it's audited, but you know, Len, what do we need to know about the BOC that we don't know already? You know, like I don't need to pull back the curtain to see the guy, the little green man playing Oz. I know already that, you know, that there's no gold in Canadian vaults. I know that. I know that, we have done a poor job managing inflation. I think a poorer job than our American counterparts in trying to communicate in a way that, you know, not subdues is maybe too strong a term, but keeps people calm about the inflation numbers and the pressures they're feeling. I think we do a worse job. And I don't know what the benefit of auditing the Bank of Canada is. I think that this is a sort of fun political, you know, soapbox for him to get on, for Pierre to get on. But as far as value, I don't really think there is much. Sounds like you're the same.
Yeah. In terms of the gold reserves, I read, I'm not sure if this is true or not. I'd love to know if there's any truth to this, but Canada holds 300 grams in total of gold. Sick. Have you ever heard this?
I knew we sold a bunch of it. Like every time I listen to someone talk about sound money, it's always the same, right? Like they talk about America, some of the European banks, and Canada. And Canada infamously sold all its gold 15 years ago or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I heard it was 300.
What did we buy with it? What did we buy with it? Blu-rays, probably. Those were pretty cool around that time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Thumb drives.
Cool.
A lot of thumb drives.
Everyone had a thumb drive back.
Can't have enough of those, right? Fuck. Money well spent. All right. Let's move on and talk about Ledin. And they adjusted their savings rate for the month of May. And this came into effect the 1st of May, 2022. So if you have Bitcoin on their service there, up to 0.1 BTC, you will be earning 5.25% APY. And balances over that, you'll be earning 2% APY. And for USDC, they decreased their yield on that to 7.5% APY. So there was an adjustment here. And I suspect we're probably going to get a few more throughout this year. So there's a trend here from what I can see. It's still very good, but it's trending in a direction that may, you know, make some people not too happy.
Yeah, but me, I'm still earning. You.
You know what? I'm still earning a yield on what I have over there. Yield may be the wrong thing. I'm earning some interest in what I'm putting on there. So in terms of that, I'm happy. I wish it was a little bit higher, but it's better than just sitting in cold storage doing nothing. At least I'm getting something out of this. So yeah. So yeah. Everybody that has lead in savings, be aware that they adjusted their rates.
So, okay. Let me just say that you said something there that we're going to get heat about for sure. That it's better than having your stuff in cold storage to put on lead in. Some people would disagree with that, Len, that having in cold storage eliminates at least one vector of risk. I have some stuff there too. I know a lot of people listening to the show have some stuff there. I get messages from people fairly often about the quality of the service, quality of customer care, quality of just the platform and the rates, honestly, to be quite frank, have been really good. I don't know if this is a good sign long-term for Ledin. I'm going to continue to use the service. I think one of the things we've talked about many times is we support companies who are true to the mission. And Ledin, you know, we've had Mario on a number of times. You've met Maurizio as well, I think. And
I met Maurizio, Adam, and Mario.
Yeah, so those guys are Bitcoiners to the core, man. Mm-hmm. They take it seriously, and that's one thing I like. And so until there's some problem with the service, Len, honestly, I'll probably keep some Bitcoin there. I may keep adding to it. I may not, but I'm not interested in taking off any of the stuff that's on there right now. That doesn't change my view at all.
So in terms of it being better on on lead and then your cold storage. Of course, you'd have to take into consideration the level of risk. In my opinion, if you have a decent amount of Bitcoin on your reserves, putting 0.1 on Ledin to earn the maximum amount of yield, I think that's probably the best course of action because you're maximizing what you're getting, but not exposing a lot of your allotment of Bitcoin. So that's my recommendation. If you don't have 0.1, well, then you have to figure out what you want to put on there, if you want to put anything on there. But my suggestion, if you have a decent amount of Bitcoin, you know, maybe one plus Bitcoin, if you're a whole coiner, consider putting 0.1. That's just my own opinion. And get the 5.25 as of May and run from there. I mean, to see what happens. And
yeah
maybe they'll keep the 0.1.
Can't go wrong, man. Like, it's really not, like you said, I don't want to say it's not that much. It's a different amount for a different person, but it's worth thinking about, I think, at the very least. They do a good job with the proof of reserves, the security, all that stuff. It's if you're going to do it, there's not a better platform to do it with.
Yeah. And the last story I have, it's a tweet that came out from somebody called the Church of Max Kaiser. Kind of seems odd, but why I'm bringing this up. Apparently, this individual, he bought over $100,000 of Bitcoin from the exchange Swan Bitcoin. And because he bought it in Canada, he's being dinged $4,700 by the Canadian government. And because apparently you're buying property outside of Canada.
Oh my God.
Very odd. Very odd. But this is more of like, look what happens when you buy Bitcoin, a substantial amount from outside of Canada. If you are going to buy Bitcoin and a lot of it, I would suggest use one of the Canadian exchanges. I don't think you'd suffer the same consequences this individual did. $4,700 is not a small amount. And yeah, it's just, it's a sad story, but it's just a cautionary tale for people out there.
That's exactly what it is. A cautionary tale. There's no reason to venture out into international waters when you're buying Bitcoin. You can do it here. Like ShakePay does it. They do it well. There's other exchanges that don't sponsor the show that do it well. There's just no reason. What is the reason, Len? I don't know what would drive you to do this.
I don't know. I wish I had an answer. I don't. I'm just more so just reiterating what happened here in case anybody plans to buy a substantial amount of Bitcoin from an American exchange or any non-Canadian exchange. You might get dinged.
My
2 cents. And that's it for the Canadian side. We could transition to the rest of the news. And the first one I want to talk about is really cool story from Fort Worth, Texas. And the city is mining Bitcoin. And it's the first U.S. city in the United States that has officially declared that they're going to be mining Bitcoin. And it's not like it's a large amount of Bitcoin they're going to mine. I'll go to that momentarily. But this was approved unanimously by the city council. So they're very... they're pro this, but as for how much Bitcoin they were going to mine, well, they purchased 3 Bitcoin Antminer S9s, man, 3 of them. They're going to be running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they'll be hashing out and mining Bitcoin for the city. So it's not like they have some S19s out there doing their thing. S9s, they're dipping their toes, and it seems like it's as far as they're doing in this particular case. Cool stuff, but really, let's not get too excited over this because it's only 3 S9s, so not a really big thing.
I'm with you. I was going to mention the quantity of hardware they brought in. Listen, it's still cool. Every journey starts with one step, right? Is that what they say? Pretty sure that's a Bible verse or something about footprints in the sand. I don't know. Anyway, one of those quotes applies here. I'm sure. I just don't know which one. Glad to see it, but let's not get carried away. You know, it's all right.
Exactly. Another one story that's this is a more of a shake my head thing. The Bank of Japan. I'm not sure if you follow this story, but they're going to be maintaining stimulus over there, and they vow to continue unlimited bond buying. Unlimited, and this is going to be
YCC, man. YCC.
That's exactly it. So it's the 10-year variety of the government bonds, and they're going to be holding their short-term interest rate, and the target is at -0.1%. And it's incredible that they've done this. And this vision of the unlimited bond purchasing, well, it was made by a vote of 8-1. I'd love to know who that one person is and give that guy the Bitcoiner of the Week award, because that guy, he knows what's going on and he's bucking a trend over there. But unfortunately, he was outvoted by 7 or 8 more of his colleagues. And they plan on spending 6.2 trillion yen, which is about $48 billion US, on additional gasoline subsidies, low interest loans, and cash assistance to alleviate some of the problems that are going on with rising prices. So they're basically, to get out of rising prices, they're buying their way out of it. It just doesn't seem, does it make sense to you to print money and buy stuff like that? I don't know. You can't buy yourself out of inflation. You have to address it in other means. The Bank of Japan, man, it's truly a shake my head moment. They're fucking things up over there royally. And this is going to have a real problem going, because this is not a small country. This is a fucking big country, big economy, and it's going to fuck things up royally in the world.
They've been doing YCC for a long time over there, right? Yeah. Like they've been basically policing their stock market, their yield curve, anything that they can backstop to prevent collapse, they've been doing it. And to be honest, they've been doing it with some effectiveness. I don't know how they've managed to do that, but all good things must come to an end. And it sounds like they're getting a little closer here day by day. I continue to be astonished that more people are not talking about yield curve control on Twitter. My Twitter feed is pretty stuffed with it, but a lot of the old FI, like TradFi guys, don't talk much about it. They talk about inflation. They talk about how the fan mags are collapsing, all that stuff. But it seems to me this is a more important story, and that it also seems to me that the States is going to go this direction in like the next couple of weeks. Like, I don't know if that's something that concerns people, but I again, seems to me like not something you do with a lot of tread left on the tires. That's all.
No, think about. And to make matters worse over there in Japan, it's such an older population, and those older people are still working away. What happens when, you know, they're no longer able to work? What happens to the economy over there? It's just a ticking time bomb. And I'm not looking forward to see what happens there. It's going to be a fucking shit show. Mm-hmm. But moving on, this is a topic that I think you want to talk about in great detail. It's the gross domestic product in the U.S. declined by 1.4% in the first quarter. And this is below
the annual. Right.
Sorry?
It's gross, all right.
It is gross. Correct. And this is below analysts. They were expecting 1% gain. So instead of a 1% gain, they had a decline of 1.4%. So that's a huge miss. They're throwing the wrong darts on the board. The declines, they noted there was declines in fixed investments, in defense spending, and this is a problem that I've been talking for a long time, record trade imbalance. This is the trade imbalance has been a huge issue. There's always money flowing out to other countries, namely China, and not much coming in. And that's something that it's not sustainable. It's also noted that consumer expenditure rose 2.7%, which is, you know, in a vacuum, it's not too bad. But unfortunately, you know, the cost of goods and everything rose much, much higher. So this fucking totally outweighed that. So really, this is a sign of things to come. But unless you talk to a guy named Ian Shepherdson, he's a chief economist of Pantheon Macroeconomics. He said, this is noise, not signal. The economy is not falling into recession. Man, this guy's a fucking So there you go. Listen to Ian Shepherdson. Everything is fucking hunky-dory. No problem with the economy. It's just fucking simply noise, not signal. Everything's going to be great. Keep putting your money in your savings account or under your mattress. You'll be fine. No problem. This guy knows what's best for you.
Don't believe your lying eyes, everyone. The economy is fine. Okay, Len, personal savings rates in the United States, as far as economic indicators of either strength or weakness, during COVID peak, April 2020, 33.8%. Do you know what the savings rate is now? Don't forget, you've heard from Freeland over here and different Fed governors over there that savings rate is indicative of economic strength. People are saving more than ever, right?
Throw it on me. I'm curious to see it.
It's 6.2%. Compare that with 8.3% in February 2020. So we're back below the COVID, pre-COVID.
Significantly rate. Below.
We're fucked. They're fucked over there. Like we're fucked too, probably, but that's real low, man. And so I was thinking about this today too. I know you and I talked about this in the past, and I actually heard the Woke Antidote guys talking about this on their show. Can I posit to you that much the same way as I accost people of Gelman, for their Gelman amnesia, when we talk about how we can't assume that people who make these mistakes also don't make mistakes in other policy decisions. Could I convince you that the definition of recession, hyperinflation, all these things are actually just cooked and we're already in a recession? We are there now, I think. We had obviously contraction in the States last quarter. Just like the inflation numbers, Len, that contraction is way deeper than they're letting on, I think. And unlike the last contraction, which was, I think, during the COVID, during the first quarter of 20, or I guess second quarter of 2020 during COVID's really hysteric peak. That was like, you know, a sort of an explained issue with the economy, people staying home, the printing, all that stuff, consumption was understandably down. But now, Lem, what is the excuse? What is the rationale for economic contraction now? What is it? There isn't one. And so, yeah, this is a systemic issue now. You can't blame this on Russia and Ukraine. You can't blame it on Trump, although they'll try, I'm sure. You can't blame it on COVID. It's a problem with the system. This is a major issue, man. And, you know, I think about like the personal savings rate again. Dude, people are spending money like crazy. They're dipping into their savings. They're running down their accounts, trying to make ends meet. And there's no end in sight. There's no end in sight. What I was going to say earlier is that I am pretty sure now, after reading that Zoltan piece from Credit Suisse on Friday, a little bit of Arthur Hayes and some Luke Groman, that they're going to cut rates again before the end of the year. They're going to cut again before the end of the year, not just stop hiking. They're going to cut again meaningfully, more than 50 basis points before the end of the year. Take that to the bank. I think that's going to happen. We'll have to, again, we never ever started that red book where we keep our predictions and look back on them, but
we got to start doing that.
I know. I think you're going to see cuts before the end of the year. I think it's almost inevitable now. What do you think?
I can't speak on that. I don't know. I'm shocked that they got to the point where they're raising it to this point, because isn't it the Fed going to be raising it this week by 50 basis points? That's the rumor.
That's what they say. Yeah.
Yeah.
They say they're going to raise 50 in May and then 50 again in June. Yeah. I'd be shocked. But you know what, Len? It would give them a lot of room to lower rates again in the fall.
They could do 25, you know? And slowly. Yeah. Yeah. I like what the
raise them during the summertime. People are outside having coronas, not the virus.
Totally and, forget about
you
it.
You know, in the fall, when they're back inside, you cut them again, especially like leading into the midterms, right? Like there's so many moving pieces, but it just seems to me like in the fall, you're going to get a cut. It almost goes without saying.
Yeah. The midterms is something that it's wild card here. That's because there's going to be a lot of political pressure on the Fed and how they're going to be doing business. But I like what Chuck M says, the super bolivar. Never heard that term before, the super bolivar. But yeah, like how we got here, Joey, like it's a mess, but
it's a clown show, man.
There's actually a saying that goes for this, and it's there's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, but probably in Tennessee, that says, "Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, can't get fooled again. Remember that. Can't get fooled again."
great statesman, George W. Bush. Yeah, incredible.
What a fucking stupid. But yeah, with that being said, let's just mosey on to the next topic. And there's a tweet just floating around, and it's picking up traction, but there's errors in it. So it says that the Australian government is planning to announce a 40% stake in private homes. This is going to be a new policy that they're going to be enacting. And so the government of Australia will be contributing up to 40% of purchase of new homes and up to 30% of the purchase of existing homes. In Australia, the price of homes, it's even worse than it is in Canada. If you look at the price of Melbourne, it's absolutely incredible. The price goes absolutely nuts. This is not true in terms of the Australian government is going to be doing this. It is a political platform. It's on the platform of the Labour Party. They're not in government. They're in the opposition. So what they're saying is if they are going to form government, that they are going to enact this policy. But it's not the Australian government yet. It may be something that the government does in the future. But for the time being, it's just a platform on a policy. But one thing that I just want to note, the fact that this is being discussed by a major political party in Australia, it's kind of nuts. We talked about student loans being forgiven earlier in the show. Now we hear stories that, you know, there may be potential of the Australian government buying up the giving 40% of the homes for people buying new homes in Australia. That's nuts. Like, where does this end? Like, new cars for everybody, new phones, new computers. Like, what the fuck? This is absolutely nuts. It's definitely like you will own nothing and be happy. It's definitely that's the narrative at play here.
It's weird that there's no. Like, okay, so in the program, okay, the details are still a little fuzzy, obviously. It's a political vehicle more than a pragmatic one at the moment. If the government's backstopping 40% of the purchase price of your home, what's going to happen to the purchase price, Len?
It's going to go more up. It's going to go up
to meet that 40% unlimited backstop from the Australian government. And the home prices are going to continue to be very difficult to maintain or to attack for home buyers. It's not that hard. Like, I don't understand. Like, this is the problem with like a desperate population, right?
People, but there's a caveat to this too,
to own a home. What is it?
I believe it was for homes that are less than $1 million. I think that's Australian
even still, even still, like, okay, so every house is going to be more than $1 million then. And then what are they going
to
do?
It's going to, every host will get to $1 million. A house that used to cost $600 will now cost, you know.
And then what are they going to do? Like these programs will never work without like strict communistic price controls. Like, it's amazing to me that this stuff goes on with, off without a hitch. And the problem again is that when people are so desperate for a fix and to live a better life, they will take anything, even if, you know, it comes with, a clause that may be damaging to you or to your society, in this case, long-term. And man, is that ever tough to hear. I hope that they push back on this in a major way, but I don't have a lot of hope for it, Len. Like, I wouldn't bet that they're going to.
Did you hear about the gas fees for Ethereum? They've jumped quite a bit this week. They were being reported as high as $12,000. I saw that they were reported, like confirmed as around $4,000, but 12,000 is the number I think that it was being reported about, but nothing confirmed in that regard. So the Putin price hike seems to have nailed the gas fees for Ethereum. So we have to blame him for all this garbage here. That's insane, man. The protocol is broken. You know, making a transaction 4K, you guys spent for fucking $10. That's bullshit, man. I could fucking move money or Bitcoin on chain on Bitcoin, where it's typically, people would say it's not very efficient, but I'll still move it for fucking pennies. 4K versus pennies? I know which one I'm going to buy. I'll fucking buy Bitcoin, not fucking Ethereum.
I love it. Len, we don't speak very favorably about Ethereum most of the time. This is no exception. I mean, if you're into Ethereum, presumably you're still waiting for the merge, which may or may not ever come. You're still waiting for the gas fees to fix themselves, which may or may not ever come. You hung your hat on CryptoKitties 3 years ago. You hung your hat on NFTs last year. Both of them are at zero now, with no use case on the horizon for either one. What are you still there for? You know, what is the point? If it's, you know, increased scarcity that you think you're going to get with the merge or the burns, just move to Bitcoin. The scarcity is baked in. If you think it's, you know, lower fees down the road, just move to Bitcoin. Lower fees are already there. If you think it's going to be store of value, well, we got that too. We got something for everyone over here. And the weather's nice, you know, people are friendly generally, I guess. And there's no one wearing unicorn onesies, man, looking like they're malnourished and disheveled. Like, come on over. You're going to like it. That Nakamoto Institute versus the Ethereum Foundation meme, the Desert Pepe meme, where the Bitcoin side is like deadlifts, stakes, steady network, and the other side is like veganism, ill-fitting suits, and a bunch of other stuff. Like, it's spot on. Just come on over. We'll make yourself at home. We got room for everyone. If you're of sound mind and sound heart, we'll take you. And to Defiance point in the chat, and we want to help for sure. Definitely want to help.
And Randall Gilmore talks about the proof of stake, and it's partially the topic of the next story I have, which is about Solana. And it's not truly proof of stake. It's a, from what I understand, it's a mixture of proof of stake and proof of history. I'm not exactly sure how it works, but that's from what I understand. Well, they had some real problems with their network and it crashed because there was a lot of bots out there after some release of NFTs. So it's fucking nuts that you have this protocol, which is now deemed to be beta. They've now included the words beta in front of it. That was halted. Oh, by the way, you know, if you read Solana backwards,
I don't even say it. We'll be removed. The video will be taken down.
Anal OS. Fuck that, man. I don't give a fuck about that. Think about that. Anal OS. That's Solana for you backwards. Just because they show you, they got to fucking take it up the ass, because that's all you're going to be doing if you're going to be fucking investing in Solana. This thing goes down every so often. It's not a bug. It's a feature for this thing to go down because it's just not fucking stable. And how is it not stable? It has the word beta in front of it. That shows you that this thing is a fucking joke.
I don't understand why you'd buy it after listening to that All In Pod episode where those guys are all laughing about dumping their ICO tokens on retail. Like, why would you still play that game? Just don't. Like, man, there's just better ways to spend your money than wasting it on these tokens that are obvious scams. And then worse, like, as if the ICO thing isn't enough and the founders tokens aren't enough, now you got to deal with network outages. At least Ethereum doesn't have network outages. You know, it's bad for a lot of stuff, but it works most of the time if you want to move money and you got $4,000 lying around to do it with. But Solana, you can't say the same, can you?
It
sucks.
No, but, it has periodic downages. And
it does. I know. Yeah.
It's the second one this year from what I recall. So
it's the second one in like a month or 2 months. It's like fairly frequent. Yeah.
Yeah. You know who wouldn't buy any fucking Bitcoin is fucking Warren Buffett. You hear that guy? That guy, he's out there. He's fucking trashing Bitcoin.
Your transitions are getting better. Like, is this a Buffett story?
Yeah, it's about him and fucking they reported him and Munger were on stage talking about their fucking shitcoin company. And he's saying that he wouldn't buy all the Bitcoin in the world for $25. Like, what a I can understand you don't understand it. That's fine. But you have to at least acknowledge the fact that the price run up is so great that it's something that shouldn't be ignored as an investment. It's for somebody that is considered a legend in investing world. Why is he discounting this so fucking much? I don't understand him. Like, I don't know. There's not much I got to say about this guy. Father Time will take care of it for us itself. But
oh my God, sorry.
It's the truth. But the reality is, fuck him. Fuck the Charlie Munger. They don't understand Bitcoin. It's probably better that they stay on the outside looking in.
Those guys are looking old, but they are sharp still. I'll say this. I don't want to badmouth Charlie and Warren because they are, like you said, legendary. But I'll leave you with this stat. Do you know what makes up 40% almost of the Berkshire Hathaway equity portfolio at the moment?
Cash.
Apple. So if they didn't hit Apple out of the park, how much of a legend are either of those guys?
They did really well on Coca-Cola too, didn't they?
That's fine. Yeah, I know. But are they revered the same way without the Apple trade? Everyone talks about the Apple trade as the best investment of all time in the individual. Yeah.
Do you know between the years, I think it's 2000 and 2020, they beat the S&P 12 times?
Yeah.
In that 20-year period, that's throwing a fucking dart on a board, right? Like, that's not a fantastic record. Granted, he has a track record preceding that is fantastic.
Right.
It makes me wonder if he's just hasn't evolved with the market and the market just has gone beyond him and he doesn't understand it.
You sound like Dave Portnoy. Remember Dave Portnoy during COVID there saying that Munger and Buffett were their has-beens and he was the new hotness on the market?
Yeah, I'd listen to David Portnoy any day over those two jabronis. He at least brings the fire to the table. Fuck those guys, man. They don't understand Bitcoin. But Portnoy owns Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
is he a shitcoiner too?
He's not anymore. According to Nat Brunel at that conference, he showed her the wallet and it was all Bitcoin. So,
did he super follow her?
Somehow I doubt
that's
it.
That's really the only way you could truly get the information if you do that.
Somehow I doubt it.
Okay, well, enjoy with that. That's all I got to say. There's not much else to say in this episode except if you have a Bitcoiner of the week or no coiner.
I think we should make a Gandalf, honestly.
Yeah, that's the guy I was going to make for
my... Yeah, we should make a Gandalf because the guy's doing a lot of work. He's, you know, people don't know that much about Gandalf, but like he's got a wife and a kid and he's traveling a lot. He's meeting up with other Bitcoiners. He's going to conferences. Somehow this guy's got time to make a website for BIP119 for idiots like us to look at good resources on the topic. Incredible, man. And he's doing it for free. He's snatching up meme domains and making them into usable resources for Bitcoiners. Yeah, that's a big win for the community, a big win for us. And he's got to be Bitcoiner of the week.
Yeah, I agree. And during this episode, I snagged the website Bitcoin Gandalf, BTC Gandalf. So if he wants it, he knows where to get it. And so no, I'm kidding. I did not snag that. That's strictly for him. I'll never squat on that. That's a douchebag move.
Big time.
Yeah, that's it for this episode, really. I don't have anything.
Yeah, great. That's good. Let's do. 10 minutes of after show here. The price of Bitcoin, Len.
Yeah, I'm curious to finish. Got a pump.
38,439, the opposite, actually. So there you go.
Yeah, let's close this episode really fast before we go down any further. 49,405 in Canadian dollars. Under the $50,000 marker, people, buy fucking Bitcoin. Let's bring it back above 50,000. Fuck, what happened to 58K US dollars? We were stuck there for a long time.
Where's Deniz?
Now we're the 38K gang. So we hit stablecoin territory. We haven't moved Bitcoin up very much in the past while. So we're officially a stablecoin. So if you want to
build the base, right? Everyone says you get the biggest jumps after you build the base for a long time. So we've been building here for a while. We've throwing bricks like the Toronto Raptors at the base right now.
The last time we had a really like tough time moving, I think it was July of last year. We were stuck at like the 32, 33 area for some time. And yeah. it just ripped to 69K in November. So you're probably right in that assessment. But we have to wait to see what happens with the Federal Reserve. So I have a sneaky suspicion what their decisions is going to impact with the price of Bitcoin. Because it, you know, if they raise interest rate 50 points, I think it's baked in. But
yeah,
if they say 25 or zero, which I highly doubt.
Well, the announcement's tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we'll see tomorrow. Okay, anyway, God bless you. If you're on audio, come over to YouTube, watch the other back half of the show. And if not, we'll see you Wednesday when we're streaming at 7 o'clock on Wednesday, right? We got a late stream this week because of some scheduling issues on our part.
No, not scheduling issues. It's because we're dealing with time zones.
Okay.
Yeah. But we could break the news, can't we?
Who we got?
We got Mawson. So we have Mawson from Australia. So because... we're going to be doing it at 7 p.m., I believe, Eastern.
Yeah.
So that's going to be, I think, around 11 o'clock-ish a.m. over there. So it's just the time difference is so – or is it 9 o'clock? I forget. Whatever the fuck it is.
We had Dan Roberts on at 4:05 our time. It was bright and early over there.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember, like, if you watch Australian Open, 7 o'clock here it starts, Eastern, and it's like the first matches. And I think it's 11 a.m. is when they start the matches in Australian Open. I based my time zone off the tennis schedules. Yeah. So
good night and God bless. Come over to YouTube for the rest. Take care of yourselves.
French Open's next, by the way. Take care, everyone.